You can get it riding. You can get it sliding. You can feel it coming on about four. A hard-earned thirst needs a big cold beer. And the best cold beer is Vic. Vic Bitter. You can get it walking. You can get it talking. You can get it working a plow. Matter of fact, I got it now. Victoria Bitter.
Welcome to the first exciting episode of Rangers Australia. Straight in the news then. Thousands of parents illegally homeschooling. It's an ABC News report. It's ABC in Australia, not the one in America. As a new school year begins, more than 50,000 Australian children will be homeschooled, and in most cases, their parents are doing it illegally. It is compulsory to send children between the ages of 6 and 16 to school and register them for homeschooling, but more parents are opting out than the traditional school system and keeping their children at home. However, thousands of parents across the country are not registered, and that means they potentially face prosecution. Governments have been reluctant to take action, but in a landmark case last October, Bob Osmark from the Homeschooling Association of Queensland was persecuted for not registering with a home education unit to homeschool his 13-year-old daughter. Mr. Osmark has homeschooled his 9 children. He was charged under the Queensland Education Act that says parents have to enroll their children of compulsory age in school or register them for homeschooling. Mr. Osmark was found guilty and fined $300 Australian plus costs. So that's about 50 cents anywhere else in the world. I didn't register with the home education unit. I refused to do that because I see education as something of a parental right, he said. We as parents know and love our children best. It is not the fold-faced bureaucrat in the education department that knows what's best for our child. Many homeschool families kind of do it secretly because they fear the Education Queensland taking legal steps against them and so forth, sending police to the door and that kind of thing. There are 942 children registered for homeschooling units with the homeschooling unit this year. That's the Queensland homeschooling unit, by the way, not the Australia-based. It's split up in states rather than done nationally in this country. There's 942 children registered with the homeschooling unit this year, but Mr. Osmark believes that there may be another 10,000 homeschooling underground in Queensland. During the past decade, the homeschool community has boomed thanks to internet availability of how-to-do-it kits and mail-order curricula. Is curricula a word? I think it should be curriculum, but there you go. At a get-together of homeschoolers in a suburban park in Brisbane, one mother, Cindy, said that she was about to start homeschooling her son, but was afraid of the paperwork involved. I'm not planning on registering because of the work involved, she said. I'm not very organised and disciplined in the sense that it would be a big thing for me to undertake. Cindy is one of a large number of underground homeschoolers, but the secrecy and distrust have made it difficult for researchers to get hard data on whether homeschooling produces a better or worse education. There is a sense of distrust. There's a general sense that government doesn't need to tell. Sorry, there is a general sense that, quote, the government doesn't tell us what we need to know. It's like they don't want us to exist. End quote. Said Glenda Jackson, who did her PhD on homeschooling at Monash University. We can't find the families to do population sample testing. That's even when you interview. Sorry, we can't find the families to do a population sample testing that's even, and when you interview, you're doing research with these parents. They can be very suspicious about who you are and what you're doing and why you are doing the research. The Tasmanian Home Education Advisory Council recently asked its 600 registered parents why they decided to homeschool in the first place. 17% said the main reason was religion, nearly half listed philosophical reasons, while 27% were not happy with the local school, and 7% had children with special needs. Education Queensland did a similar voluntary study in 2002 and found 20% of parents listed religion as the main reason for homeschooling, and 21% said it was because they were not happy with their local school. In the United States, Stanford University Rob Reich said that underlying those reasons was often a deep distrust of authority. I fucking wonder why, when you get charged $300 Australian for bloody homeschooling your children. I know plenty of homeschoolers who would still homeschool even if they had the exceptional public school right next to them, said Mr. Reich. They are simply opposed in principle to state authority over their children, which they extend not only to school environment, even to state hospitals and regulations of any sort. The challenge now for education departments around Australia is to get homeschooling parents to agree to a simple form of monitoring of their children's education. Standards exist for a reason, and they're about the kids, not about the parents, and the idea about what they should do, said the acting manager of the Queensland Home Education Unit, Hannah Warsaw. That's why we live in a civil society that provides us with the capacity to represent children and to monitor their educational needs. If people aren't registered, I'd say you're breaking the law. And if you're doing the right thing by your kids, you've got nothing to hide. Now, I'm sure everyone who's probably listening to this realises that I help homeschool 2 8-year-old boys. We are registered with the state, because the boys came out of school at age 6. Let me get that right. Yeah, age 6. So they've been homeschooled for, this is their 3rd year now. And we registered because because the boys came out of a school, basically, the department had their record and said, this child exists on our record, therefore they must either go to another school, and we will check up whether they go to another school, or they must go into homeschool. So we registered for homeschool. Now, there's a message there from someone up Queensland way, and saying that the form is heinous, and the form really is heinous. You honestly spend more time trying to get ready for the goddamn visit from the homeschooling authorities than you do actually educating your child. It's very easy to educate a child. Like any grown-up adult who is of significant enough brain capacity to homeschool a child will realise that they need to know basic science, maths, education, you know, they need to be able to read and write English, you know, art classes are kind of helpful, music classes are great, you know, let's go off and do dance, drama, gymnastics, whatever you want to do with your kids, yeah? That's all great. And the problem is that when you spend, you know, 6 months of your life getting ready for the goddamn visit from the homeschooling authorities, then you're not educating your child for that time. Now, why not simply say, you must meet the requirements stated in the law? And if you're caught not doing this, then your child will go through DOCS, Department of Child Services, and will have a file issued on them. And the form will be a one-page form saying, I wish to homeschool my child, this is where I live, da-da-da-da-da. Now, I'm bloody sure that when they come around, they really don't give much of a shit, because you're talking about someone who works for the government, so they really could not care less about what you are actually doing with your child. Their only job in life, their only role in this existence, is to basically work for a government that doesn't give a shit about your child. This is proven by the fact that state education in every country is absolutely woeful. I mean, you know, whether it's Australia, the United Kingdom, America, Canada, anywhere in the world, I basically give you that state authority education is woeful. And not only woeful, but is damaging to your child. You know, these parents who are trying to do the right thing, you know, there are always people who are off the fucking scale and off the planet and they're nuts and they shouldn't be allowed to have children then. But all the normal everyday people who are homeschooling their kids, well, just let them get the fuck on with it, yeah? It really doesn't require any involvement of the state for you to educate your child. And as for filling out forms, they've all got better shit to do. Anyway, one of the more useful things the government is doing. Victorian fox and wild dog bounty. Foxes and wild dogs are established pests in Victoria and beyond eradication, meaning they require ongoing management by all public and private landowners. Nothing is beyond eradication. We have proven this with every other species in the known planet that we can quite happily eradicate without even trying. The problem is, we don't spend enough money on eradicating wild dogs and foxes in Australia. But anyway, effective fox and wild dog management requires an integrated approach utilising all available management practices, including poison baiting, no poison bait fucking dogs, trapping, that's kind of cruel, exclusion fencing, well that's nicer than trapping and fucking baiting, fumigation, yeah, I'm not even going to go there, and appropriate animal husbandry. Well, that's obvious, because if you have appropriate animal husbandry on your nice, you know, organically standardised farm, then you really don't have much of a problem with wild dogs or foxes, actually, strange enough. Hunting can play an important role in supporting an integrated management approach. Note that this is the Department of Primary Industries in Victoria stating that hunting has an important role. This is amazing, because for the government of any country to admit that hunting has an important role is just phenomenal, especially in a Commonwealth country, I believe. To reward eligible Victorian hunters and their efforts to contributing in the fox and wild dog programs, the Victorian government has announced a $4 million, that's about 15 cents anywhere else, fox and wild dog bounty commencing on the 1st of October 2011. The initiative will deliver the government's contribution to reinstate fox and wild dog bounty and reward eligible Victorian only, I point out, hunters with a $10 bounty reward for every fox killed and $50 for every wild dog killed, subject to Victorian fox and dog bounty terms and conditions. Most effective means of achieving a sustained fox and wild dog population numerous is through simultaneous and coordinate community breeding programs implemented at a landscape scale and supported by other control techniques. Existing wild dog and fox control programs may be conducted on public land will continue during the bounty period. So if you live in the state of Victoria, or you live close enough to the state of Victoria, or you perhaps know someone who lives in the state of Victoria who has a firearms license, and you wish to go out and make some money, I reckon $50 a dog and $10 a fox is pretty fucking good money, as far as I can see, considering what's ammunition cost here, about dollar a round, $2, $2, $3. Easy enough. The next one's a bit heinous. Bull rapist to be released from prison. I don't know. This is just Australia summed up for you. A man infamous for a series of rapes around Wollongong has been granted parole after serving 21 years in jail. Terry John Williamson, known as the Bulleye Rapist. Bulleye is a mountain range in Australia. Known as the Bulleye Rapist, was convicted in 1991 of raping 11 women and children at knife point over a 10-month period in 1989 to 1990. So, we have someone who raped at knife point, so basically with an offensive weapon. We have someone who raped 11 women and children with an offensive weapon over 10 months in 1991. And he served 21 years for this crime. 21 years. That's an average of just under, 2 years per sentence, or 2 years per victim. So if you go to jail in Australia for raping a woman or child at knife point, you should only receive 2 years in that period. You're going to get 2 years jail time. That's what it should work out to be. 2 years. Yeah, more than that, I'd be complaining to someone about it. Maybe the New South Wales Parole Board. Anyway. The 42-year-old appeared at the New South Wales Parole Board in Parramatta on Friday via a video link up from Silverwater Jail. The court heard Williamson poses a moderate risk of reoffending. A moderate risk of reoffending. Moderate risk of reoffending. That doesn't mean he's never going to reoffend. That doesn't mean they've managed to cure him. That means he is moderate. I would have said that was kind of halfway on the level of reoffendingness. I invented your word there. So he's got a moderate risk of reoffending. That means, I would say, 50% likely of going out and raping someone else? That's someone we really want back on the streets of New South Wales. Thanks for that. But the New South Wales State Parole Authority has ordered his release on February 10th. So that's in 8 days from now. It's the 2nd of February, by the way, everyone. Williamson has repeatedly applied for release since 2004, when he became eligible for parole. So, why has he been allowed to apply for release since 2004? Like, what? That's fucking 1981 to 2004... That's 13 years in jail. He got 13 years fixed sentence for raping 11 women and children at knife point. Well, his release is subject to strict conditions, including a requirement to wear an electronic monitoring device. Well, it's not like we can't take those apart. Take libido-inhibiting drugs. Fuck, we all need some of those. And submit to psychiatric and drug and alcohol testing. Well, we all suffer from drug and alcohol testing whenever we drive down a street in Australia. And as for psychiatric testing, well, let's face it, that's just on the cards whenever we see an advertisement. Williamson is also banned from the Illawarra region and from contacting his victims or any other people under the age of 16. So he's unable to contact anyone under the age of 16. And he's not allowed to move back to Illawarra, the Illawarra region, because that's where he did the crime, just in case anyone realizes who the fuck he is and goes around and kills him. Oh well, what a shame. The parole board said Williamson terrorized a substantial area of Wollongong, and some terror is still felt. Well, I'm not fucking surprised when you rape fucking 11 women and children in the middle of Australia, quite close to Sydney. Wollongong's a city in Australia. But the board said the release before Williamson has his full 24-year prison term is essentially an adequate supervision of his reintegration into the community. So he only got a full term for his crimes, which would mean 24 years. 24 years for raping 11 women and children. I don't think that's kind of fair, personally. I would have said it should have been like life 11 times over. But that's just me. An advocate for victims has condemned the decision. Well, seemingly quite rightly so. Howard Brown from the Victim of Crimes Assistance League says Williamson should have been locked up for life. And I think we can all say, hear, hear. Never to be released, that did not occur. And so there is obviously no justice in relationship to the situation, he said. I am here on behalf of one of the victims who was not registered, and I know that her life has been so disrupted by the entire process that she actually left the state. So I leave you with that prison does not do anything for anyone, let alone actually solve the problem of criminals re-offending, let alone re-educating them so they don't re-offend. let alone actually makes them serve a term of purpose, a term that is useful for the crimes they committed. And we're going to go now, from, of course, from the world of the insane person being a bastard to their fellow man, to the fascist overlord being a evil person to their fellow man. Outrage over police strip searching child. There is growing public anger, I'm not surprised, over the strip search of a 12-year-old girl in Hobart. Hobart's in Tasmania, that's down south, for anyone who doesn't know. With people calling for a review of police powers. A review of police powers? I'm sorry, why hasn't the officer been charged? The child was strip searched twice, not once, but twice, during a raid on a house in Rockaby on Wednesday. Police went in with a warrant and ended up seizing drugs and cash. Now, okay, fair enough, there were drugs and cash on the site. But I'm pretty sure that the 12-year-old cannot be held responsible for what their parents were doing with drugs and cash. And when was it illegal to have cash anyway? Fuck. I need to go to the bank and put all my money back in the bank, because it's obviously illegal to have cash. What am I going to do with all the paracetamol? Fucker. They say the girl was searched in a bedroom by female officers with her mother present. Now, quite obviously her mother does not realise what is legally acceptable. Irrespective of that, the two female police officers should have had a fucking clue. But Greg Barnes from the Australian Lawyers Alliance says it's unacceptable, which of course it is, because no one should strip search a child of 12 twice. He says the case should be subjected to further scrutiny. Well, no, we should just sack the fucking police officers, and make sure they're never allowed that being a role of authority again. It doesn't matter what the police did, where the police did it, and who was around. This is a 12-year-old child, he said. This is a matter I would have thought which the Ombudsman ought to be crawling all over to have a look at how this 12-year-old ends up being strip-searched, as it was not just once, but twice. The Tasmanian Aboriginal community has also joined for calls for a review of the police powers. Michael Mansell from the Australian Aboriginal Centre says that laws should be changed, arguing that drug searches do not justify strip-searching a child. Well, of course they don't. It's fucking plain the obvious and makes perfect sense. You know, obviously this child was going to be taken into care anyway, and obviously when the child went into care, because you can't, that in this situation in Australia, the child would be taken into care because the parents would probably be arrested, and the child has to go somewhere, so it would go to docs, then docs would probably end up realising that the child had on them drugs. And, you know, this is not to suggest that the child was in any way or shape or form, you know, needed to be strip searched. This girl is not killing anyone, she's not bombing anyone, she's not a terrorist, she's a child who is alleged by police to have drugs, he said. Now, if the police really believe she needed to be strip-searched because it was in the public interest to do so, note, it was in the public interest to do so, they should be forced to go to her before a magistrate who considered the girl's position. State opposition spokeswoman Elsie Archer says the Tasmanian government must review strip-search laws. We need immediate reassurance that the power will be investigated and reviewed, she said. Police Minister David O'Brien, or it might be O'Brien, don't know, O'Brien I'm guessing with, is calling for calm on the matter. I'm calling for calm. Well, I'm sorry, but I think you need to be firebombed. And says he is seeking a briefing on the incident. Seeking a briefing? What, he didn't read the fucking case report before he went online? And went on the air and started talking about it? I'm not going to prejudge anything that has happened and be speculated on in the media without getting the full details from the Tasmanian Police Commissioner, and I'll be doing that, he said. I think it's important that we deal with issues such as this on a basis of fact and not on emotion, and I want to fully inform myself before making a judgment. The mere fact that this man, who is a police minister, has not fully informed himself of the details of this case before going on the fucking public record is just amazing. I would urge police not to judge too harsh. I would urge people, rather, not to judge too harshly or too quickly. Make sure they are fully informed of the facts. And once we are all fully informed, we can take steps. Is that because we're going to go and hide what happened and bury it in a big pile of paperwork at the back of the filing cabinet in the dungeon underneath the New South Wales or the Tasmanian Police Headquarters, behind the big sign that says "Beware of Sharky"? Is that where we're going to find the case file? Of course it's important to get the right balance between appropriate policing and appropriate human rights levels. Now, I don't know if there's any such thing as appropriate human rights levels, but if they are, I'd love to know what they were. That's the end of the news today. I've got a few extra ones. I'm going to save those for next time round. I will apologize now for the heinous levels of my voice. This is getting recorded on a laptop because it's a proof rather than anything else. That rolled out at about 20 minutes, so we'll segue after the song, which is a really cool song, I'll point out. We'll segue into the discussion, which is obviously not much of a discussion because it's only me, so it's more like ranting, but that's good. We'll get there anyway. And the discussion so far is, what the fuck is up with China? Get your head screwed on straight. Have fun listening to the song.
The Black Book was already ancient at the dawn of man's history. It contains all the knowledge there ever has been and ever will be. Until recently, the Black Book had been thought to be lost to the sands of time. But those who thought that were very wrong.
The book has been opened. The words have been read. Now, strange voices speak within my head. Raven wings beat, a blur behind closed eyes. Dark things scurry before me, driving up a cloud of flies. A thousand lost souls before have gazed into this void and read the words, the sigils, the pitfalls to avoid. Within its dark pages lie secrets best left unsaid. Yet those thousands lost voices still scream within my head.
Ah, you are here to seek something different, are you? Yes. I see you are looking at the tome. It's a wonderful book. Except it's a book only for certain people. People who are interested in things of a nature that is unearthly. Pre-human, you might say. Brought back from the island of Madagascar, once a fine island. Some claim it to have been maybe Atlantis. Oh, don't reach for any kind of funds. This book is not for sale in that fashion. It's more for barter. What do you happen to have there, sir? Oh, well, that's very interesting. Please, bring that a bit closer. And you found this where? Ah. I'll tell you this. If you were to happen to come across a dagger, say with a peculiar alchemical symbol upon it, and say this tawdry little item, I could see forth and bartering across for the tome. For the tome has no use for me, but you obviously seem to be of an individual who has a direct interest in other worldly things.
And into the discussion. All as it should be, but a cold harlequin ranting at the fucking laptop while the house is empty on his own, walking backwards and forwards. What the fuck's up, China? Get your head screwed on straight. Now, this came out of a discussion we were having in IRC earlier in the week, this week. So that's the first week of February, 2012. We have been talking about the fact that the production of most of Western society's goods now happens in China. And at the same time, I was reading an article on fstoppers.com about how China changed the American lighting industry by Yaron Schneider. So I'm going to do a bit at the start of the full article is in the show notes, which you should go and download because they're excellent and I spent ages fiddling with them. Not really. I did get all of the URLs to become URLs though in the PDF, which I was quite impressed by. So you should go and press on that just so you can find out how cool I am with a computer. I'm elite. So why do brands matter to us? When at a grocery store, why do we pick out the Heinz instead of the Western Family, or the Nike instead of the Payless? Why buy brands because we have earned, why we buy brands, rather, because they've earned our trust? Well, that's true in the case of Heinz. I don't know about that in the case of Payless, in the case of Nike. Heinz make excellent sauce. Even if we don't know of a brand, we begin to trust them simply because they have a logo, can afford advertising, and can put out a product that seems to work well. For example, think of HTC. I think that's the Huawei technology company in China. A year ago, they pushed for market share in the US because they were a much lesser known brand. In a matter of months, they had a massive market share in the smartphone industry. Why? Branding. In the case of HTC, it was not only successful branding, but also a successful product. That is the way it should work. But what if marketing and advertising aficionados realize they can manipulate the idea of a brand for the purpose of making money? What if what you were led to believe to be a truly original, handcrafted, wonderfully engineered work of art was really just a gilded turd? I love that idea. I love the idea of a gilded turd. I think we should gild alpaca poo. I think it'd be wonderful. I think you could sell it on the open market for fortune. Wouldn't you want to know? I'm a marketing specialist. It's not me, I'm not a marketing specialist. The person writing the article, Aaron Schneider, is a marketing specialist. It is no secret that I studied what makes someone want something. Now that's the definition, that's what it should be. There's a very big buzzword there. Someone wanting something. Not needing something, someone wanting something. Because if we needed it, we could make it probably. And if we couldn't make it ourselves, we could probably get past the whole brand association with our needs. Yeah? Like, I need tomato sauce my sausage when I have a barbecue tonight. But I really, really want Heinz tomato sauce. I have to go into the phone. I'll be back in a second. So there we go, back after the brief telephone conversation with my partner, who has decided to go to the upholstery. No, not upholstery. No, the material store while the baby is asleep in the car. The baby is very happy, by the way. That's why she's going to the store. Is it a shop? Is store an Americanism? I'll have to find out if store is an Americanism. I'm sure it must be, therefore I should not say it. And I've forgotten my place in the article as well, which is very, very, very bad of me. I should have unplugged the phone, obviously, or gone and hid in the shed with all of the naughty things that exist in the shed. But yeah, I think that you go ahead and read the article. It's quite interesting. It's about The whole article is basically about how the American lighting industry took its products and decided, I would say, very stupidly, to instead of holding their manufacturing base in that country, they decided to send their manufacturing base to China. Now, that's great if you want to make a lot of money and if you can source a product, well, it's not really great if you can source a product cheaply enough, but we will end up sourcing a product cheaper, thereby meaning your corporation can get bigger. But the problem with all of this is, the problem with any form of offshore manufacture is that not only does it mean that you're no longer manufacturing, which means you're no longer controlling the level of manufacture, you're never no longer controlling how the workers are working, you're not controlling what the product is that you're actually putting out there. Like, you know, is this product of the same spec as the one I sent to the company in China, or is it, you know, just made of slightly cheaper material that may look good on the surface, but aren't really good when we come down to, you know, relying on this sort of thing. And the other real problem I have with the whole manufacturing overseas thing is that seemingly whenever you send manufacturing overseas, you don't seem to send it to that nice first world country where they have the unionized workforce who, you know, you don't send it to Germany, basically, right? Very often, you don't often send work to Germany to say, hey, go and build me a smartphone. But the difference between the average German worker's lifespan and their existence at work is a bit like comparing, say, a medieval king to the way that, say, an average Chinese pauper or peasant now works in China. That's about the two levels of extreme. I'm suggesting that, of course, you know, Chinese workers probably don't have the rights or the ability to access fundamentally, well, I sort of said human rights fundamentals as we would maybe wish they could. I don't think anyone would disagree that China is currently a hotbed of fascism and also militarism. And the mere fact that it owns most of America through its loan of, loaning of money to them is quite phenomenal. But, back to the fact of manufacturing. So, China decides that they're gonna start selling off all of their workers' lives and making them all shorter and doing all sort of heinous shit. And they decide to take in all this work. Now, the Chinese are not stupid as a country. They, you know, the whole industry of China is not dumb. They very quickly realized that they could not only produce what they were being asked to produce, but also they could reproduce it from the design they've been given. And beyond that, they then started to send more and more people to university. They have a massive population base. They have massive numbers of universities. They have massive people fighting to get higher up in the corporate or socioeconomic structure, meaning they want to become engineers. They want to become designers of things. So America then starts sending all of its design work to China. Now we don't only have a complete lack of manufacturing base in America. Yeah, I mean, go and look around Detroit. From what I know of it, there's not much there. It's a rust belt for a reason. We also take all the design and all of that engineering know-how, and we've suddenly sent it overseas. Now, I don't know. I don't think I'm the cleverest person in the world, but I can see that there's something fundamentally wrong with giving someone in a fascist country with no human rights whatsoever in their country, seemingly, the ability to reproduce an awful lot of stuff that perhaps you don't want them to. Whether that's camera lighting equipment in this case, or arms, ammunition, munitions, military jets, planes, all of this sort of stuff. You know, America says that we will not let Iran have nuclear weapons. We will not allow them to get to that stage in development. But they don't say an absolute thing about China having exactly the same ability. Now, no matter which side you stand on in the Middle East conflict, whether you side with the Palestinians, the Israelis, or you think they're all a bunch of fucking idiots, religious or otherwise, you can honestly say that nuclear arms should not be owned by anyone. And possibly the fact that that China should perhaps have to lift itself out of the rather dirty world that it currently lives in before we should honour her with these manufacturing rights. You know, we're not talking about something that's hard to do or a difficult process. You know, I mean, China builds, for God's sakes, like the world's solar panels. You know, if they wanted to, if the Chinese government decided, instead of going and kicking people off their native lands, which they've lived in for thousands of years, at best, at least rather, instead of kicking these people off and putting a great big fucking dam there to put a hydro station, if instead they gave everyone the access they probably rightly deserve to put solar panels on their roof, and lifted that country peasant worker out of that nature they're in, of having to basically send off their children and have them go and work in these brutally repressive, you know, government-sponsored manufacturing plants, where they have no rights, no dignities, and no ability to organise or better themselves. If they actually wanted to, they could do an awful lot. And perhaps then they would be allowed to call themselves communists. I don't believe that that China has anything at all to do with communism. I think no matter who you are, that if you actually could read a book on a treatise of communism, you would realise that the Chinese have nothing at all to do with the Chinese have nothing at all to do with communism. Most declared communist countries, of course, don't have anything to do with communism. It's completely fucking, it's completely apparent if you realise what communism actually is. Whether communism is right or wrong, completely different conversation. But I find it interesting that exactly the same thing that's happened in America over the last, say, 50 years, this movement of manufacturing, then the movement of design knowledge, being sent overseas, and the repercussions this had, that America is now basically a service country. It's a country full of overweight, fat, balding people, seemingly, who haven't got a fucking clue about how to build or make anything on a general level, on a national level. This is not to suggest that, of course, rangers in America don't have a fucking clue. This is to suggest that all of those inwardly sane people, they don't have a fucking clue. This motion is progressing, and it's happening all over the world. And it's not just happening in China. The same is happening with the IT revolution that's happening in India. And the problem with this is that, as any code monkey knows, writing code is fucking expensive. You know, you at least spend 6 to 12 months learning how to write code in the system you're in, whatever the system that is. After that 6 to 12 months, you're pretty well qualified to write code, and you can generally get what you need out of the code. It might not be perfect, but you can get out of it what you need to. Now, some people go to university, spend 4 years there, and get pissed a lot, and then seem to end up writing code, but I would suggest that probably isn't necessary. If you can do it any other way, I would do. But that same process of taking, in this case, the manufacturing of code, is happening and going into India. And again, all of that technological level is happening in India, therefore it's not happening in countries like England, Germany, America, you know, all the first world countries, Australia especially. Like, you know, we are losing our manufacturing base. There's a company locally, Drivetrain Systems International, which is now owned by a Chinese corporation. And because I go to the local technical college and I'm studying fitting machining, I've always been interested in metalwork, but I go to technical college one night a week, and I go and play with the lathes, and I go play with a million machines. It's quite fun and addictive. You know, make round things round and square things really square, really, really cool. But we have guys coming from DSI, and constantly there are people coming over from China, the engineers, the managers, this level of people, not the fucking workers, management criteria. The management are coming over, taking that knowledge of manufacturing, engineering, design, taking it all back to China, but nothing's happening here. You know, we have a manufacturing base in Australia that is so limited in what we can actually produce, yet we are so, so rich in the most amazing things we have in the ground. We have, you know, untold amounts of coal, we have untold amounts of steel, we have untold amounts of gold, we have, you know, the ability, basically, if we actually pulled our finger out of our ass, to go and manufacture goddamn near everything any first world society needs. Problem is, We don't do this. The problem why is because some other fucking idiot runs the country, apart from us. Now, this is not to suggest that we can't do anything about it. And I think the solution is pretty obvious. We have to take those level of knowledge and that level of skills for various different things and bring them back into our own hands. Now, whether that's us as rangers or us as the general public, the public of the country we are in should be fighting to keep those skills, that knowledge of those industries in our country. Because, okay, we might not need to manufacture everything we ever needed, you know, circuit componentry, but we bloody well should be able to. You know, if China declares war on the first world nations of this earth, and decides that all of us dirty, bloody, democratically elected countries are going to go and fucking die, where the hell are we going to source everything? You know, it's not very long before they've taken over, you know, most of the South American countries just by giving them money. You know, it's not hard to see them taking over Africa and buying up farming land in both Africa, Australia, and many other countries as a means to populate their own, to subsidize their own population base. Now, what happens when China gets to the level that it controls not only all the manufacturing, but all the design, all the production, and we're all sat in our first world, lovely little condominiums, townhouses, with our lovely Gucci bloody bullshit trinkets hanging on the wall doing amazing things for us. We've all got our little iPad, we're all listening to our fucking iPhone, and we're all playing with our bloody iPods. But what happens when they say, enough's enough, you can't have any more trinkets, you can't have any more toys? You know, the average level of a manufacturing house, the average age of a manufacturing house in Australia, is well beyond retirement. The same is true in England. You know, England used to be a stalwart of manufacturing. They used to manufacture goods, and these goods were recognised as being excellent. This doesn't happen anymore. Now, okay, there's a lot of economics behind that fact, but there's also a shitload of unemployed people. There's also a shitload of people in England who, let's face it, really didn't ever need, just like me, didn't need to go to university. We weren't interested in it. We didn't give enough of a shit. We wanted to get a trade and do something fun and exciting with bits of metal. You know, we wanted to be a blacksmith. We wanted to go and work as a carpenter. And the problem is that most of the work that is actually done in these industries now is being sent overseas. You know, you go along to the local hardware shop and you're hard-pressed to find an Australian, English, American, insert any first world country, made tool in that shop. All these tools, all of the knowledge, is being made in China. Now, okay, sure, you can go and buy the really expensive tool that's made in the first world nation, and probably you should do, because you're actually supporting a local manufacturing base. But why can't we, with the way technology is going, why can't we reproduce, mass produce in a safe, sustainable way and get up to a level of getting just past our needs? You know, we don't all need a TV, by the way. In fact, none of us need a TV. In fact, none of us even want a TV if we actually run us about it. But how about we get to the level where circuit componentry isn't made all in China or all in Taiwan? Why don't we get where the fact that all of the steel doesn't come out of India? What if we get to a place where, as first world nations, we are still able to have less than 10% unemployment when we have an economic crisis, because some of our workforces actually make things and do things. Because that's the definition of having an economy, is making things and doing things, taking a raw product and turning it into something else. Now, I'm pretty sure that China are actually on the back step for the whole lot. Because if you look at where society's going in first world countries, you look and say, well, okay, we want sustainable, renewable things. We don't want things that, you know, are made in China that are just throwaway junk. We want things that were a bit like 50 years ago, before this sort of weird economic theory came out about how we could create shit that broke 10 minutes after warranty did, or shit that broke just long enough after you got it so that you think to yourself, hang on, I can't actually take that back anymore, you know. So there's a movement back there, and perhaps we need to push harder and harder towards that movement. And maybe that'll help us get our manufacturing back into first world hands. Maybe that'll help us get that design process back into first world hands. You know, where do we go past being first world? We need to become sustainable. And sustainable isn't shipping shit from all over the world to your first world nation and shipping back from a big hole, dirty desert in the middle of the South Pacific all of your resources. I hope you enjoyed it. That was about 60 minutes long. That was basically what I had to say on the subject. I'm interested if you have a view, have a point, if you want to send me some email. You can hop on to the IRC, which is R4 NGER5, little hash in front, on the freenode.net server. I'm regularly in there, so you can PM me, private message me. Or you can probably get hold of me by the Rangers forums, although you will have to join now. I got really sick of spamming and really sick of all the stupid bastards out of Eastern European countries and out of random other places. So I have locked the forums down. To get access to forums now, you have to go along, unless I know who you are, as in physically I have met you, or physically as in someone else has met you and is willing to say, I know this person, they're not a dickhead. To me in IRC, and pretty much everyone hangs out in IRC, if they're not willing to do that, then you're not going to get access to the forums. But go to the forums and go and read the nice post that Graffin said there, and then come and hang around in IRC, and you'll find out that we're actually a bunch of friendly, lovely people. If you are an Australian and you've got an Australian news story you'd like me to read out to the world, I'm quite happy to do so. Hopefully we'll get some more interesting Australian people. I have another local friend who I will hopefully get hold of, and we'll become a stalwart of the radio waves, or rather the internet IP tubes. I'm gonna post this on YouTube because there's some really cool stuff happening there, so we're gonna stick this on YouTube. It'll also up on archive.org, so if you want to go and have a look at what the amazingly talented Graffin, Neodemi, /Kevin, /people in IRC managed to do with one of our audio files not long ago, then you can do so. I was supposed to do a Quartermaster's kit review. I think a kit review for this week should be firearms. I think that as a fundamental level in a Commonwealth country, because that's, you know, apart from the Americans, they're pretty much sorted to guns. America, just go and organise yourself some guns. You know how to do that. You've got the Second Amendment there. You're safe. You're fine. If you live in Australia, I would suggest, and I'm going to suggest a couple of different places to go and organise your firearms licence, because in Australia you have certain rules and regulations. It's very different, well, slightly different from America. I like to think of us as being the slightly more socialist version of California, which I'm sure all of the American listeners will get a giggle out of. I'll point out that California is not a socialist state, by the way, either. You need to read about socialism. Slightly different there, but anyway. Oh, we all love honey. So, I would suggest that your kit review for the week should be guns. And what you should do, what you have to do, your homework for the week is to look into, if you're an Australian, supplying yourself with 1,000 rounds of ammunition in both 308 and 223 Remington. That's 308 Winchester, 223 Remington. You need a firearm that will shoot 223. You need a firearm that will shoot 308. I suggest that you go and look at something with detachable bottom metal. I suggest that you go and look for something that has controlled round feed. That's a Mauser type action. These things are slightly different to the standard that are sold in most firearms stores, but I think that it's worth the extra $5, $10, and I think that the engineering of these products is far in excess of, say, the round receiver type group of Remington 700 clones. Pardon me for burping on the radio. Remington clones are really good. Some of them are amazing, you know, not to detach them, you know, Stellar Actions, people like this, APRS, another manufacturing company in Australia that are doing, well, not really a manufacturing company, but a company that piecemealy sticks things together. But yeah, I think everyone should go and look at how, in their Commonwealth country, they should go and, organise their firearms licence. Now, firearms licences in Australia are really easy to get hold of. You either need to join your local Rifle Association, whether that's New South Wales or the Victorian Rifle Association, or if you live in Western Australia, there's probably one over there. Don't ask me, I've never been to Perth. I haven't got there on my camel yet. Go and join your local Rifle Association, or the SSAA, the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia, which I'm proud and happy to be a member of, or if you want to be a member of both, join both, because they do different things. The SSAA and the VRA do very different things. They're very different in the way they structure their organizations and the competition that you will use. Now, the other thing you should go and do is look into getting your Category R or Category G license. Now, a Category R license allows you to, it's a hunting license, it allows you to hunt on public land in Australia. So that's state forests as such. Now, there's heaps of state forests, and there's a ballot system and lots of information. Go to either the DPI if you're in Victoria, or go and look at the, I think it's the Wild Lands Protection Board. No, it's not right. Oh, I can't remember now. Google it. You'll find it. But yeah, you need to go and organise your Category R license. That's going to allow you to hunt on first world terms. Go and allow you to hunt on public land in these countries. In these states. Now, if you remember SWR, you remember the VRA, that's going to give you an ability to go and join a handgun club that's going to get you a handgun inside of 6 months, if you're clever, and you go and turn up the six times you have to turn up every year. Well, is it 10 now? I don't know, whatever it is, I should go look at my book. You know, if you've got to turn up 10 times at a range and go and practice your handgun, well, you should be practicing that often with your handgun anyway. And that's going to get you a handgun. You know, and let's face it, that's an important bit of engineering as far as I can see. You know, if you go and join the VRA and you go and take part in the Queen's Cup and you train once a month, you know, you're never going to get really good, but hey, you're going to get a rifle out of it, and a rifle is an important thing. More importantly, if you go and get your R license, or you go and get friendly with some farmers, you know, they're not scary bogans, they're actually quite lovely people, you can go out and go hunting, go out and go deer hunting, go out and go, you know, wild boar hunting or pig hunting. Go out and shoot some roos. Go out and get some rabbits. You know, we live in a very wide, desolate country full of very tasty, tasty meats. Yeah? And we should all be doing the utmost to reduce wild dog populations, wild fox populations, because both these things are heinous and should be gotten rid of. We should be doing our utmost to reduce the number of rabbits in this country. You know? We should definitely keep eating kangaroo. We should probably hunt our own, because the more people that hunt kangaroo and the more people that eat it, let's face it, the faster that we're going to get kangaroo farms in Australia. Because if, for all those foreigners and who don't understand, all kangaroo meat is actually wild harvested, and it all comes out of South Australia, because the South Australian government was the only one which would allow anyone in the country, the South Australian government was the only government that would allow the sustainable harvest and therefore hunting with firearms of kangaroos to manage the levels. The rest of the countries, the rest of the states in Australia and territories in Australia, don't really do anything about them. Everyone jumps up and down about it, but no one does anything about it. But you can legally, I'm pretty sure you can legally hunt kangaroo. Just take that on advice and go and read your firearms registry safety handbook. excuse me. Other things for Recce Media. I can't think of anything. There was an interesting discussion about how much Google knows about you, and it was on one of the torrent sites. That'd probably be a discussion for next week, of how much Google knows about all of us, which, let's face it, is way too much. I'm sorry for the next door's dogs if you can hear them. They're going absolutely nuts because someone's gone next door. Interesting things I worked out this week. Dates and calendars. In a normal year, the day will rotate one day for every year past, i.e. the 1st of January is on a Monday, then it's on a Tuesday, then a Wednesday. However, in a leap year, every leap year, it will skip a day. And all leap years are multiples of 4, so you can easily work out, as long as you know what year it is. It's 2012, we know that's a multiple of 12, 12 is a multiple of 4, so we know that we're in a leap year. That means we have 29 days in February just to fuck us all up, and that means that the day will move an extra day. I still haven't worked out how to time my brain where the moon cycle goes for its 13 months, and correspondingly where the gardening calendar should be for the waxing waning of the moon, because that has a lot to do with how well your plants will do Well, it's proven, so as to scientific fact says that if you plant at certain times of the month, or certain times of the lunar calendar, then you will get more productive growth from certain vegetables, or certain fruits, or certain green crops. But I cannot in my head, no one has managed to tie for me together an easy way of remembering when these things will happen and how to hold in my head the lunar pattern without going out and looking at the moon, which sometimes I can't find because it's not always in the sky. I really hope you enjoy the midtime music. It was a lovely little ditty by Scrotum Hammer. I'm sure Iron Angel won't mind that I mentioned his name. Scrotum Hammer has a lot to do with Iron Angel, the resident blacksmith of America, who hangs around in the Rangers forums and on IRC, who's a lovely gentleman who decided to let me use all of his, or little bits of his work that he'd done, for the RPM challenge. You should go and check out the rpmchallenge.com. That's, RPM as in the, revs per minute challenge.com. And definitely check out Scrotum Hammer's webpage on there. And yeah, the song was, Madness Descent. I really hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope that something happens with this, and I hope I have to get some emails and responses back. If you don't have my email address, then you probably don't need my email address. If you do have my email address, then feel free to send me an email. If you don't have my email address and you want my email address, then you have to come on IRC and prove that you're actually a human. And once you've proven that you're actually a human and you're insane enough to have my email address, then you will have my email address, and then you can contact me. But please leave any queries, quotes, comments, general annoyances, you don't like my voice, you don't like me, I don't like you, any other comments, welcome. Enjoy the next week. I'm sure I'll have fun changing nappies, folding nappies, changing little singlets, washing little singlets, hanging the washing up, getting the washing in. It's amazing being a stay-at-home dad. And yeah, hopefully I will get really, really interested, and hopefully this will go somewhere, and hopefully I can get some of those other raving lunatic antipodean types on here, and we'll have a bit more of a faithful discussion, as it were, and we'll have some more interesting people to listen to. So this is Harlequin. Have a lovely day, have fun, be kind to other people, and remember that you are only limited by what you believe yourself limited by. Ta-ra.
I did share a gag with Dalai Lama because he was in such fine form. I decided that I would tell this gag. Now, it did prove to be not my most successful ever. Check it out. So the Dalai Lama walks into a pizza shop.
Cosa shop?
Pizza shop.
Pizza?
Pizza shop, yes.
Yeah, pizza shop. And says, can you make me one with everything?
What's that? What's that? Oh, yes.
Do you know what I mean? Can you make me one with everything?
Oh, theoretically possible.
Oh, I knew that wouldn't work. Didn't know what pizza was. It's always going to fall down there, isn't it?
You know that a joke's in trouble if you've got a translator off to the side every couple of words.
Anyway, I felt better having spoken to him.